call. Welcome to the show, my man. How you doing?
My heart's pounding here. We're running a race down in Calgary this weekend. I just finished the test session, so I'm leaking all over the place, but smiling.
Okay, that's good. My apologies. The race report, of course, brought to you by Cantorque. Hey, COVID's been tough on all of us, and like some of you have put on a little bit of weight, but at Cantorque, it's all muscle. The next generation RT Series low-profile hydraulic actuators are now available, stronger and more durable than ever. Arrange a demo at cantorque.com. Give me your thoughts, Colin, because, man, there was lots of controversy. I believe at times, you know, one team doesn't like it, so they go crazy over it. If the roles were reversed, something tells me Red Bull wouldn't have thought that collision was nearly as egregious as they claimed it was. I watched it numerous times. I, you know what? Hey, he got the 10-second penalty to Lewis Hamilton. I thought that was valid, but I didn't think it was worth anything more than that. What did you think?
No, I agree with you 100%. Depending on who you root for, depending on who you like and who you don't like, is really going to weigh heavily on how people are going to assess that situation between Verstappen and Hamilton. A couple of things that are inarguable, as they were, you know, Verstappen has taken advantage of Hamilton on almost every start this year, either by, you know, sometimes he does get a clean getaway, but in a lot of cases, Hamilton is ahead and they get to a corner and Verstappen's running Hamilton off the corner. Most notably at Imola earlier in the year, drove him right into the curbs, caused a bunch of damage to Hamilton's car. And it's happened time and time again where Verstappen wasn't penalized. And, you know, I will never make the mistake of a lot of broadcasters trying to speak for the thoughts of a driver, what was going through his head at any given time. But it sure seemed like Lewis had made up his mind that if he continued to let Max take advantage of him, he was never going to get in front. And what it seems like Red Bull has figured out, as long as they can hold the Mercedes back for the first lap, two laps, they can start pulling away because the Mercedes really struggles in the turbulent air. They knew if Hamilton got around Verstappen, the race was over. He was going to pull away. So they were obviously fighting extremely hard. As they came to Cop's Corner, as it's called, you can see from Verstappen's own camera, he looked, he saw Hamilton was inside of him, he made a correction to the left where Hamilton was on his right, and then chose to turn in anyway, where the driver who's in front, you know, there's all kinds of guidelines and gentlemen's agreements on whose corner is whose corner, but the big thing in that particular situation, Verstappen is the lead car, he's got the air on his nose. Hamilton from the inside loses all the air on his nose once he starts getting into that wake. So his ability to turn the car, even as the broadcasters, you know, former F1 drivers should know this, that you can't just turn the wheel when you've got no aerodynamics, when you've got no downforce on the front of your car and make it comply. I think Verstappen was incredibly aggressive. I think Hamilton was incredibly aggressive, which when you boil it all down is about a 50-50 split. Because Verstappen took the worst of it, I think more people are leaning towards saying that that's the deciding factor, but that doesn't weigh into the judgment of the stewards. That has nothing to do with the way the rule is interpreted. And to get back to what you first said there, Gregor, the situation has presented itself. A few years ago, I think it was about 2017 in Baku, Verstappen is known to be like the most aggressive driver on the grid. He was getting hounded by his teammate at the time, Daniel Ricciardo. They went on the fastest part of any F1 circuit on the front straightaway at Baku. Ricciardo made a couple of moves, which Verstappen blocked. Ricciardo decided to send it around the outside on the front straightaway. Verstappen came in, took both cars out. And, you know, despite that being Verstappen's mistake, you know, Christian Horner looked at it and said, well, these are racing incidents. We will address it internally, blah, blah, blah. There was no outrage. There was no grandstanding. There was none of this posturing. Nobody went for, you know, pseudo tests at the hospital. Like, it was none of that stuff. And they just kind of swept it under the carpet. But because there's so much political influence and there's so much maneuvering that happens behind the scenes, and some of it's starting to get presented now, if anyone saw the broadcast of this year, you can actually hear the team communications that they play that go back to Michael Massey, the race director, to say, you know, like these guys were both, these guys being Christian Horner, the team principal at Red Bull, Toto Wolff from Mercedes, both pleading their cases to the race director, even though he doesn't make the decision. At the end of the day, it definitely ratcheted up the championship. It's, you know, I think it's, you know, these are not the kinds of things I think championships should be built on. I never want to see cars get taken out. Never want to see people potentially get hurt or actually injured. But we got, you know, we've got a lot of talking points out of this thing.
So the 10-second penalty, is that an admission by the governing body that, you know, that Lewis made a mistake? Is it just something to appease the people? Like, why give him the 10 seconds? Like, because there was harsher penalties they could impose, correct?
The order of severity would be no penalty at all, which in a lot of cases, the last couple of years, opening lap incidents are chalked up to racing incidents where they know that the pack is tight, people are fighting for everything, you don't have as much time to calculate a move. The next most severe penalty would have been a 5 second, so from nothing to five. They gave him a 10-second penalty, saying that the onus was on Lewis, and, you know, it could have got much worse. It could have been a stop-and-go penalty after that, where they would have pulled him in during race laps, stopped, held him for a period of time. It could have been outright disqualification. So absolutely, the stewards and the race director do not lend any credence to appeasing people, to appeasing the teams. They might get subconsciously swayed by that, but no, they took a look at it. They knew something had to be done. I think it was, honestly, I think a 5 second penalty probably would have been more fair, considering that, you know, these two have a long history this year. You know, they have to judge it based on the isolated incident, but I think that was the result of a long standing back and forth between those guys.
Colin Livingston joins us in the Cantorque Racing Report. I can tell you that you're right, though. If you cheer for or if you don't like Lewis, then people are going to think it's horrific. And if you like him, then they're going to think it was okay. And it doesn't seem to be much middle ground unless you have no vested interest in it. It was. Now, my concern is he gets a 10-second penalty, but he still ends up winning the race. So does that show you how much of a gap there is? And do you think next season, with the limit in spending, is that really going to close that gap? And that next year, if you get a 10-second penalty, there's virtually no chance you're winning.
Well, no. I think, you know, next year, it's the cars are supposed to be tighter together. But it's going to allow more overtaking. So I don't know how I don't want to predict that. But what's interesting is this year is a big, you know, the first spending caps came in this year. So when your car is retired from the race, you can claim $100,000 credit, which doesn't sound like a lot when we're talking about $145 million budgets, but it's significant. These crashes, like Mercedes had a major crash at Imola with Valtteri Bottas and George Russell. The damage from those crashes, where they essentially had to write off cars, is weighing in heavily. And as the guys were talking about this week, that their budgets are basically factored now to tens of thousands of dollars at the end of the year. They've got a little bit of buffer for damage. So, like, Red Bull now is potentially in it. Like, if their engine was damaged, you're only allowed to run three engines throughout the year, even if your engines are damaged in a crash. These things can really start to add up towards the end of the year if you're getting close to your spending cap and if you're, you know, if you're already on your last engine and you have to stretch it extra races. You know, it's going to be super interesting to find out what the end result of this is, because, you know, obviously Red Bull's car is essentially, you know, destroyed. That's going to be $1 million plus to put the new chassis and bodywork back on. They could really be in trouble towards the end of the year if they sustain any more damage like that.
Breaking down the world of racing with Colin Limsey and the Cantork Racing Report. Switching over to NASCAR, Brad Keselowski is making a pretty big move as a driver and as a co-owner. Maybe talk about that and how often a guy, a racer, becomes a co-owner of a team.
This is not, like, it's not entirely unheard of. I mean, Brad actually, he owned a truck series team. We raced with him a number of years at Canadian Tire in the truck series. To see, you know, there's not the only one that really comes to mind immediately, aside from this deal that just came out with Justin Marks, who's not really a known driver, was when Tony Stewart retired, left the Joe Gibbs Racing Group, and partnered up with Gene Haas to start the Stewart Haas team. You know, Brad has obviously had his eye on ownership for a long time. You know, even, I guess, you know, Denny Hamlin's doing the same thing from Joe Gibbs. He's co-founded the team, 23XI, whatever they call it, racing with Michael Jordan. Kyle Busch has, you know, Kyle Busch Motorsports that competes in the truck series and sometimes in the, Xfinity series. But, for Brad to jump in, he's partnering with one of the longest standing owners in the series with Jack Roush. I think, you know, Brad's, you know, figuring out that a driving career doesn't last forever. You can maybe extend it when you're going to be signing your own checks. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes down. I mean, Roush has really been, kind of a non-factor, non-player for a few years now. Be interesting to see how much of the knowledge Brad got at Penske. Over his career, if he can bring that over and bring that Roush group up to the front of the grid.
Colin, you know, there's lots of other things going on. It's pretty interesting when you look at just, you know, the racing when it comes to both NASCAR and F1 this past weekend. What do you think of NBC and, you know, they don't necessarily have a broadcaster in the booth. You know, they have drivers and a former crew chief. Because I've heard some people suggesting that it doesn't have great flow because there's not a professional kind of to guide them on how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if anyone's noticed that yet or not, but yeah, the NBC NASCAR broadcast with Steve Letarte, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jeff Burton. I like all those guys. I think they're great characters, but, you know, broadcasters are broadcasters for a reason. I mean, you guys know, I mean, you listen to you talk, Gregor, and you listen to me fumfer around. You can tell the difference between a professional broadcaster and an idiot that has a bit of passion for a sport. You know, the quotes and the comments that these guys are making, though, are just silly. And I mean, you know, Earnhardt Jr. is, you know, a super knowledgeable guy. He's also a team owner of his own Junior Motorsports Xfinity program. So he's got a lot of insight, but the tone of his voice and the tone of Jeff Burton's voice, they're so high-pitched and they tend to be really whiny when they get excited. For me, it's hard to listen to. If you flip the channels between, you know, a NASCAR broadcast over to the F1 broadcast, if they run at the same time, The professionalism of true broadcasters versus, you know, what are essentially color people is, you know, super apparently obvious.
This weekend, no F1, no NASCAR, no IndyCar. That seems pretty rare to have all three of them off the same weekend. But I know there is a big race in Strathmore for the Carters for the 49, North of 49 Karting Championship. So that's what you're doing down there for testing. Now, how rare is it to have all three IndyCar, NASCAR, and F1 off the same weekend?
Yeah, extremely rare. I think the Olympics is what most of the broadcasters or the series are taking a look at. Okay. That they didn't want to compete with opening ceremonies and the initial push. You know, it's not rare for F1 to take a couple weeks off between races. NASCAR taking a break this part of the season. I know that comes back to the Olympics, but yeah, I mean, for people who need to get their racing fix, from what I understand, our race is going to be, there's going to be some coverage on Facebook, apparently. I don't even have a Facebook account, so I can't tell you about that, but We've got, it's going to be a really big field. A bunch of our off-camber Carter guys are down here. I think we're going to have, up like 10 or 12 DD2s running. There's a number of other series. Shifters are here. The junior carts are here. Four-stroke, like I said, I just got off the track. It's in great shape. They've made a number of, you know, really, really significant upgrades that make the track flow a little bit nicer. So, and I've been fighting gremlins all year. I'm probably about $1,000 into repairs, trying different components to get an engine miss. And one of my karting guru, Joey Guion, told me to try a simple, like, $15 switch, and all of a sudden my cart's running properly. So I'm relieved, but I'm also kicking myself that something that simple could cause that big of a problem.
It's a tough one, buddy. Well, good luck. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks a lot.